The Blind Handyman, and we call it that because we're going to talk about tools and how to fix things and repair things and just how to do a handyman sort of things in general. My name is Phil Parr, and my co-host is Don Shaw. Donald, how are you?
Howdy, how are you doing? And we're going to be talking about do-it-yourself projects.
That's correct. And let's see, who else do we have? We have our very bored engineer, Tom Houston, is with us today.
Hello there, Philip.
Are you really as bored as I think you are?
Not really. It's going to be fun.
You look rather bored to me. Of course, I can't see, but you do. Mike, let's just kind of start out by, if you don't mind, talking about our level of vision. I am totally blind and have been since birth. Donald?
And I have between total and legally blind, probably around 2,400.
A whole lot more than I do.
2,400.
Okay. 2,400.
A whole lot more vision than some of us have.
Just somewhere in the middle.
And Tom, Tom drives the car for us. Tom is our driver, and he.
I am 20/20 with my glasses.
20/20 with your glasses. Your glasses or contacts? You were.
No, I've got on glasses.
And we have an in-studio guest today. We are doing. Well, I'll tell you about that in a minute. We have an in-studio guest, and his name is Don Patterson. Donald.
Yeah, hi guys, it's great to be here.
Are you really nervous?
Not really too nervous. do we want to talk about?
Yeah, how about your vision?
I am a very good partial travel independently. I have about, with best correction, about 20 over 200.
He's good enough that if we decided to go somewhere and ride somewhere, I'd go with him. I'd ride in the car with you.
If it was an emergency or something.
That's right.
If we were out of something to drink, sort of thing, right?
No, that makes sense.
That does make sense. I try to make sense occasionally. Anyway, the Blind Handyman Show, and you want to tell them about the Hotmail address, about our email address, Donald?
Oh, I sure would. If anyone has any questions that they just really need answered, you need to send to blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Is that cool or what? Our very own email address.
Blindhandyman.com. And Blind Handyman is one word?
One word. One word, no caps, small letters.
It's blindhandyman@hotmail.com. So that's good enough. If you have questions that you, something, a project that you want to do, or something that you'd like to fix, or something that you, or just a tool you'd like to know about, or you've seen a, maybe you've seen a tool on television that you think, I'd like to order that, but I don't know if a blind person could use that, well, maybe we can tell you, and hopefully we will have other people send us emails about their personal involvement in some project. Maybe you've done something, you've replaced a kitchen sink, you've done anything pertaining to handyman stuff. You built some steps or you put some boards on your porch, whatever you've done, we're interested. We want to know about it. We want to know how you did it. We want to know what special tools you needed. We want to know if you built yourself any special guides, if you have a wood shop or a metal shop, or you can weld or whatever you can do, if you're visually challenged, or if you're, what do they say, how do they talk about blind people? You call them blind. If you're blind, that's better, isn't it? Don't you think? Anyway, if you have some visual problems, you let us know, and we'll get back to you at our Blind Handyman at hotmail.com.
Or if you've always said, well, can a blind person do this little project? Or can't, I mean, we'd be the ones to answer the question, hopefully.
You think we would. We haven't.
We will see.
To say that we've done everything is would be a misnomer, but I've done, when you think back on it, my wife always says, it doesn't really cost much more to have a blind handyman in your house
than not having one.
If you'd not had one, you'd save a little money. And she said, my wife is one of these let's call somebody kind of people. I'm absolutely the opposite. I look at it and figure out whether I can fix it or tear it up or what I can do to it first. And then if I decide, oh, man, this is beyond me. And there are things.
Oh, sure. There's some things that just can't be can't be done, and it's better to call. But a lot of times, it can be done. Rather, you know, it's just, it's doable. A lot of things are doable that sometimes you think aren't, they are.
Well, I guarantee you, I hang around all three of you guys, and y'all do a lot more stuff than I do. I've been here to see it.
Well, you're old, too. That explains that, doesn't it? Your age.
Okay, well,
actually, he's not as old as some of the rest of us. You know, I'm sure that anything we say, oh, you couldn't do that if you were blind, somebody will call us or send us an email and say, yes, you can.
Oh, sure.
If you can't see. Anyway, blind handyman, I want to talk, my little discussion today will be about light switches and plugs that you might have in your house, and you might have a plug that you plug something into and it's kind of worn out, and you kind of have to position the thing that you plug in a certain way so that it will stay making contact with the plug itself. Or you might have a light switch light switch that works intermittently. Maybe you turn it on and sometimes it comes on and you have to flip it. Speaking of things coming on,
was that timely or what?
I mean, how timely could you be? Speaking of things coming on, that's my compressor that came on. And if you don't have a compressor, I recommend you rush, not walk, but run to Lowe's and buy yourself. I didn't think. My brother-in-law suggested buying a compressor about 4 years ago, and I thought, what do we need a compressor for? I don't know how to make it. It's like a computer. I don't know how to live without it. I have all sorts of what they call pneumatic tools. It'll go off in a minute, trust me. I think, unless Conley, our friend, I'm digressing, but we're having what we call Blind Weekend. We have several visually impaired folks here. We have, of course, us, the ones we've told you about. We also have John Bennett and John Conley, who are down here from Dallas, Texas. We're in Lufkin, about 120 miles north of Houston. We have those boys down here, and we get together twice a year and just visit and talk and discuss things and talk about computers and how to build things, and that's just what we do twice a year. So this is our what we call our Spring 2002 the Blind Weekend. Anyway, so you've got a light switch that comes on sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't, and you decide this light switch, because you know, by wiggling the light switch, that the problem is in the light switch. And because the light doesn't come on every time doesn't mean the switch is the problem. But if you move the switch around and the light comes on, then you know that it is more than likely, would we all agree, that it's probably the light switch?
Well, in fact, as we're talking about this right now, I have a switch. We have a switch actually at home at the house that when you flip the switch on, it's so loose, in other words, it would just almost drop back down on its own to turn itself off.
All right.
So that's another good indication.
So, yeah, and so it's time for you to bite the bullet. And this is like the mechanic's car that never runs.
Oh, sure.
You know,
same kind of deal.
You know, changing that light switch for you is a 15-20 minute price, no matter going to the hardware store, buying one, and changing it.
Yep.
All right. My first recommendation for changing a light switch is find something to put the screws in. If you don't, you'll end up with the screws laying on the floor or laying on the windowsill or laying somewhere, and you or I will knock them off, or someone will come along that is cleaning up and go, what are these? I need to throw these away. These need to, you know, and that'll. So find like an empty, a good thing to put screws in is an empty medicine bottle. If you take medicine, and we all do, find an empty medicine bottle, scrape the label off of it, and use it as something to put the screw in. All right. A light switch or a plug will have a cover on it. There'll be, if it's a plug, it'll have usually a screw in the middle between the two outlets. If it's a light switch, there will be a screw at the top and at the bottom. Now, this is generalizing. There are light switches that don't. There are rheostats that don't. There are plugs that have two screws. 220 plugs have two screws. But usually a standard 110-volt plug will have a screw in the middle. It will take the plate off of the screw. Now, this is usually a flathead screwdriver. We assume, talking to you, that you have a tool or two. Absolutely, if you don't have a flathead screwdriver, a kitchen knife will work, but you if you're going to do handyman things, you need to buy a few tools, and screwdrivers are one of the things you need to have. That's a flathead screw. Take that screw out, then the plate or those screws out, and the plate will come off. It'll be in your hand.
However,
yes,
before you do anything, turn off the power.
That's right.
You know, I thought about that when I was getting this together, and I missed it, didn't I? Yeah, turn the...
Good point there, Tom.
I was
Tom.
Over here signaling to Tom.
Were you kind of waving at him, were you? See, that's why we called the blind Amy, because I couldn't see him.
Well, because your back's turned.
And my back turned.
That's right.
I could have seen you had my back not been turned. I would have been better.
Huh?
Turn on, pull his mic up a little bit.
Okay.
So, and turn off the power. Yes, find the breaker. And the way you find the breaker, if it's a light, I say turn Pat's mic up, not mine.
Okay.
All I'm right. trying to.
Let's say that.
My back's not to.
There you are. There
anyway, if it's a plug, of course, you plug something into it, like a hairdryer or something like that. And you turn the hairdryer on, and then you go find your circuit breakers in your house. And you turn the one off you think is a circuit breaker to that plug or whatever that plug is, and then go back in the house. If the hairdryer's not running, obviously you found the breaker. If it is, you haven't found the breaker. And you may have to, if there are two of you there, you can leave a person. What we would do is with our walkie-talkies, right?
Sure.
We'd take the walkie-talkies. I'd leave you in the house by the hairdryer, and you'd tell me, it went off. And then I flipped it back on, off, so we'd know we had that breaker. Find the breaker, turn the plug off, or the switch off. All right, we clear on that?
Okay.
Find something to put screws in, take the plate off. And then at the top and bottom of the switch or the plug, there will be, let's see, with the plug and the switch, it'd be the same way. There'd be a screw at the top and the bottom, right?
Okay.
Isn't that right? Yes.
Huh?
Yeah, those little nests are great, aren't they?
They are. They're great.
Anyway, there'd be a screw at the top and the bottom. Unscrew those screws and put them in something. We put our screws in medicine. Now we have three screws in our little medicine bottle, and we have the plate off. All right. Look at the switch, and you'll see. First, take it and pull it out of the box it's in. Because you've taken the only two screws out that hold it, pull it out of its box, and it'll be on Romax. It'll be on some very stiff electrical wire that they call Romax, and most times it will have three screws there. They will usually be Phillips screws. Take those three screws, loosen those. I almost said take those three screws a-loose.
A-loose.
I've been up here too long, haven't I?
Usually on a light switch, if we're talking about a switch, your two wires are going to be on one side. They're going to be, ones are going to be on top of the other,
and
with
the
ground wire on the bottom.
Yep.
If you have a plug, one wire is going to be on the left side and one wire is going to be on the right side, and the ground will be on the bottom or top.
Yeah, true. I didn't think about a light switch. Would they both be on one side on a light switch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen them like that a lot.
So I guess I need to go to Shaw's and look at that light switch.
That red light switch.
So they'll both be on one side of a light switch. That's true. It's been a long time since I've done a light switch. Anyway, the three wires should be fairly obvious to you. You're feeling with your hands. Of course, if you get shocked, you're in trouble. You haven't found the right breaker if you get a little bite. 110 volts won't hurt you, but it'll scare you and make you hurt yourself is about all it'll do. All right, you find these wires. You loosen the screws. Now, these screws aren't screws that come all the way out. They just back up, and at some point they stop. And when the resistance, when you're turning the screwdriver and you feel that resistance, stop right there, because that's as far as the screw is going to go. If you've gotten that far, you're pretty much home free. You remove the wires from where they are. They're usually very stiff wires, so you can almost remove them, and they'll stay basically in the same configuration they were in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, everything will keep its shape.
It'll kind of hold as to where it goes if you just move them, you remove them, and then your switch or your plug should be free. I mean, it's something you can take and remove it and put the wires on the screws on the new plug. Push it back in the box, put the screw at the top, put the screw at the bottom, put the cover back on, and you've done this. I'm making it sound awful simple, and I guess to someone who has never done this, or someone who's a novice at this, that's never tried it, it sounds like a complicated procedure. It is pretty self-explanatory once you get in there. And like y'all said a while ago, the main thing is make sure that breaker's off.
But then another thing you may see when you get into this is and instead of us talking about the wires being attached to the screws on either side, or
I hadn't thought about
wires on both sides, on one side, they could be in the little hole.
They could be. That's the way they do it now. They push them in a little hole and then tighten the screw down, don't they?
Yep. A lot of times you see that.
And also another thing to check, if you really want to be uniform about it, is if you're going to replace a plug in your house, check your other plugs. And most plugs have three inputs, you know, the two prongs and then the ground.
Yeah.
And if all the plugs in your house have the ground on top, that the round part, put this plug in like that. If not, put it on the bottom. Same way with the light switch. When the switch is up, it's on, and when the switch is down, it's off.
That's what it's supposed to be.
It could be done backwards. That's a fact.
And so, B, you would want to check just for uniformity's sake.
Well, if you buy a new switch that's pretty much like the old switch and the wires are on the right, then you want to face yours where the wires are on the right hand side. In other words, don't turn it over. Don't turn it the wrong way. But if you put it in wrong, if you put the light switch in backward, it's a very simple thing to simply, the electricians who built this house, there's a light in the hall, and one of the switches was backwards. I just took the plate off, cut the breaker off, and just physically turned it around and put it back in the box. Because it may not have been wrong to them, but it looked wrong to me. It was on down, and I couldn't, I'm anal retentive enough, I couldn't handle it. I moved it. First day I moved in this house, I moved it. But yeah, try to be uniform and put them the right way. What else about plugs and switches?
Well, I just something else to expand on a little bit here. If you're new at this, and let's say the wires are in the holes in the back of the switch rather than around the screws, if you're new and you'll think, well, I go to pull the wire out of the switch, and man, it just doesn't want to come out. It's going to be, they're easy to push in and hard to pull out a lot of times. So just be expecting to have to put, quite a bit of force into the pull when you pull the wire out.
Well, in fact, you may not be able to pull the wire out. You may have to cut the switch to cut it away, don't you? Can you pull those wires out once you push them?
You can, but sometimes it's kind of hard to pull.
Mm. And if you're replacing the plug anyway, it would be simpler to just
to
push
cut it.
Well,
what's the difference if you're going to replace? Of course, if you do that, then you have to strip some insulation from the wire, which brings up another problem.
But everyone should have a good pair of wire strippers, huh?
Well, everyone should. It took me a long time to find some that absolutely worked, but I stripped a lot of wires with a pocket knife.
Oh yeah, that's a doable deal.
That's what I did. I hooked up a lot of radio stations and did a lot of wiring with a pocket knife. If you run onto a problem doing this, email us, and that would be, you might find some unique circumstance in which we could help, or we could email you back, or we could talk to you on the ACB radio here about whatever you happen to do with your light switch. You want to take a break? Let's take a look.
And again, that email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
We're back in just a minute with more of the Blind Handyman.
welcome to the second half, or actually we're going to have three halves. The Car Talk guys have three halves, so we can have three halves. What were you saying about the internet, Houston?
Oh, I was looking at all the buttons over here.
There are a lot of buttons, aren't there?
There sure is.
All right.
Anyway, I was saying there is a website, and I don't have it in my head right now, but I have it marked in my favorites, so I can find it.
Well, so they could call you.
No. I can email the blind handyman.
And we'll talk
at hotmail.com.
Okay.
And, of course, we'll get all the info.
And it tells you what? How to install a light switch?
Yeah, how to install a light switch, how to install a faucet or anything.
Home improvement type project.
Yes, huh? I know. Type of home improvement.
Great.
How come we don't have a website? We should have a website.
We need to, don't we?
Yeah, blind guys, blindhandyman.com.
That's right.
We need that, and we need a website where you can and just have all sorts of. I guess that'll preclude selling the tutorial tapes, y'all.
I suppose so.
Lost another one, didn't we?
Well, you can always have a membership fee, man.
Membership fee. No, you can't do that. Blind folks, they charge us, and they penalize us enough for being blind. I'm, you know, not interested in charging anybody for my cheap advice. I don't know much, but I'm happy to share whatever I know with all the rest of you blind folks.
Well, and you might remember, too, that if you get in a real bind and just can't see your way clear to do this project, we will travel.
I think see your way clear would be often a phrase.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
We will travel. We can come to your home.
And we could come and
come to your home and do it. All right, what do we want to talk about? Donald Shaw, you have something you want to discuss?
Well, we just recently had a little problem come up that, you know, if you're getting into the warm summer season, if you're in the part of the world that's doing that right now, and you go to your friendly refrigerator there and open your freezer and find out that, man, I sure am low on ice here. I think I have an ice maker problem today. That's what we want to talk about because we just recently had the problem. So,
yeah,
the ice maker just got to where it was not making ice or very little ice, and you would hear it when it would kick on. It would just be on like for a second, and in other words, the ice tray would just fill maybe.
But you could hear a quarter of it.
But you would hear it trying to fill and cut off.
Okay.
And got to talking to some people about this and did a little research on it. My original idea was to get into the ice maker itself up in the freezer and take off the cover and look to see if it had a timer or what the problem was with it. But someone that supposedly knows something about this kind of thing told me that 9 times out of 10, when you have a water problem, an ice maker fill problem, so to speak, mm-hmm. that it's going to be the solenoid and valve at the bottom of the refrigerator, at the back of the refrigerator. That's probably more than likely what your problem is.
Okay, let me ask you this. Was your ice maker making little bitty ice? Was it making? It was making ice. It was just little small,
tiny little tray.
Sometimes the cubes are thin.
Yeah, they were little thin.
Regular size, but filled up with water.
That's right.
So they were just very small.
Very small.
Little cubes. And the idea of a timer, that's excellent. See, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Or it was like it had a timer to tell it how long to fill.
Yeah, well, that's what I originally had thought about. And what really happened was it did this for a little while, and then it seemed like it got a little bit better.
Yeah.
But then we had a deal come up, and we lost our water.
Business company.
For a little while. And when it came back on, that was it.
Sorry, that was my stalking caller ID. Okay, so that's all right. It's a blind thing. Talking caller ID. Did you hear it? Hope we talked during the number, so nobody else. You know, there'd be blind people all over the world calling that number.
Instead of being blind, we should have been deaf.
Caller ID. I meant to turn those off, but I think Benny called. All right, now your water at your house, your water source supply. Cratered one time.
Yeah, it got shut off for a while.
Okay.
And for an hour or two.
And what happened?
And when it came back up, I don't know, some kind of extra trash or something got in, but after that it would not even fill up.
Nothing. And it quit filling up, period.
Could not hear the solenoid even kick on.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's the end of the line. So I said, well, got to do something. And I got back there. And let me say, first of all, to either shut off the water at the valve under the sink, the water that goes to the water line to your ice maker, or if you're not lucky enough to have a valve installed at the beginning of the ice maker line, you may have to go outside and find your main water connection and shut it off there. Which is easy enough to
Which
do.
Is easy enough to do.
Old water key.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, well, a water key or mine.
The big water key.
They put a faucet on. I mean, mine is just a valve. That
oh,
you,
really?
Yeah, that you just reach down in this. I hate it because it's down in a pipe and you think there's a snake in this pipe. You know, so you have to reach down in it, but it is a valve. You just go out there and turn it off. Anyway.
But that would be the ideal, easiest way to do it now if you had the valve. But anyway, by hook or crook or something, you got to make sure your water's off to that line.
Your source, yeah.
Yeah, your source. And, of course, move the refrigerator out, and when you get to looking at this valve and the solenoid, like I say, at the bottom of your refrigerator, you're going to see two lines. One coming in from your water source, and the second line will run from the valve up to the top of your freezer and then in. So what you need, all that you're really going to have to do is find a crescent wrench that will fit, and
well, or an open end,
or whatever type of wrench you need to fit whatever size connection you've got, and unscrew the two pipes and take out two screws and unplug a wire. Well, actually, two wires, but it can only plug in one way.
It's obvious to you
so
that it only.
It's going
to
be obvious which way, because it will only go in one way.
But the water line that comes in, you can find that. You can trace it coming from the wall, and you find where it terminates. And the place where it terminates is the place where it ends, and there's a big fat thing there, or a big something there.
That's right.
That's the thing that usually stops up. The filter
up.
Or the...
The valve, filter, and all that is in one thing. Solenoid, I think, is all in one little round type thing. But they say rather than messing with it, trying to clean a screen or replace a solenoid.
But that is the thing.
Just to buy the whole thing.
That is the thing that kicks on and makes your ice maker fill.
That's right.
I did not know that. This is something I've never done.
It's the solenoid, which... kicks on and out at on and off at a preset time.
Obviously, these wires provide it with a power source.
Yep.
And it knows that this ice maker needs to be filled every hour and 22 minutes.
That's right.
And so it fills your ice maker when your ice maker needs to be filled, or it could be temperature controlled. It could be a lot of things. Anyway, that's where the solenoid is that fills your ice maker.
That's right.
I did not know.
On that valve.
All right.
It's all together.
And you just take the whole thing off.
The whole thing. They say rather than messing with it, trying to replace one or the other, or trying to figure out which thing it is that's bad, that more than likely if it's been there that long, it's just better to replace the whole thing.
Right.
Cost about, and that could vary from place to place, but cost me right at $30 for the part.
And so, you usually, you went to our favorite hardware store and there wasn't one available. I mean,
there wasn't one available.
They didn't have one.
Had to go to the appliance doctor. Any appliance store in your town, any appliance parts supply, plumbing supply type store should have.
Or actually Sears might, everybody
Sears,
has Sears.
Sears would be a thought.
You know, would probably. You think Sears would?
I think they might have that.
We should have tried that. We should have looked. We might do that before we. So you bought this thing. You took the old one off, and of course you had the old one in your hand.
The old one is held on, and the new one, for that matter, is held on by, only is held on to the refrigerator by two screws. That's it, two hex head screws. Little short screws, easy to drop little screws.
So find something to put screws in.
That's right.
And here we go back with
Thanks
that.
To that hint.
Okay. So, and that's pretty self-explanatory. Once you find it, once you're behind the fridge and you've cut the water off and you've located this thing, then take it off, and it could be done, correct me if I'm wrong, if you, in an emergency, if you were very careful, you could do it with a pair of pliers, couldn't you?
You could. You could do it with a pair of pliers. One other thing to touch on here, it just so happened that we had, on ours, we had a plastic type tubing running from, it could either run from the wall, from a an outlet on the wall behind the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
It could run from under the sink, which ours was running from under the sink. I've seen them both ways. And it just so happens that ours was plastic tubing with a compression fitting, they call it.
I know the guy that ran yours.
I bet you do.
To begin with.
That's how that got done. That's how that got done many years ago.
Many years, I drilled a hole in the side of that cabinet and ran that. I used to live. Don lives in a house that I used to live in, so he's fixed up this house. It's much nicer than it was when I lived there.
In fact, that same line is still there. So.
That same old line is still
same
there.
Old line.
Well, I didn't charge any extra for that little wonderful piece and it's plastic tubing in it.
It is plastic tubing.
Yeah.
But that brings us to the next point. It's possible that a lot of folks may have copper tubing under theirs, and then it would be a question of, is your tubing still good, or do you need to replace it with plastic, or just keep your copper? Copper uses flare fittings and plastic tubing, of course, compression fittings. But then you could get into a whole other thing.
You got to remember that projects like this are reasons for buying tools.
That's right.
You may be forced to buy a copper flaring tool. Jeez, you'd sure hate that, wouldn't you, huh?
And a copper cutter.
And a copper cutter. A pipe cutter. You may be forced to buy all kinds of things. Or you could call a plumber and pay him $143 to come and change it for you.
That's right.
What happened there?
I know what happened.
Your
headset fell off.
Actually, too, you might mention the fact that this is probably the number one problem with refrigerators. In the age of modern times now, refrigerators themselves, compressors and everything, last forever.
They really do.
But because of the fact that Don has had this problem with his refrigerator, I had to do the same thing about 10 months ago, and then I have a friend that is also, her ice maker is not working at this time, simply, and a lot of times it has to do with your water supply. The little screen, the valve gets clogged
It's a filter.
Oh, sure.
And it has to do with what's in your water, but this is probably the number one refrigerator problem.
And you don't want to buy a new refrigerator because your ice maker quit working. I mean, I'm sure there are people who do that. Before I met my wife, she might have done that. She might have said, ice maker done it. Well, now she lets expensive blind handyman Phil.
That's right.
So I get to tell my ice maker joke, the only one I know. Guy said he bought a new fridge and he got water and ice through the door. And I said, that's the problem with my old one. I guess not. All right, moving right along. All right, ice makers, are we done? Anything else about ice makers?
Ice makers, I ever wanted to know.
I don't think of too much else other than that.
I don't think we planned it. No one will ever believe this, will they?
It's probably the ice maker.
Probably the ice maker guy.
America.
That's right. It probably is.
Probably some plumbing company here in town.
Well, I know that Bennett and Conley in there saying it will probably be sued.
Probably.
Why don't we take a little short break and we'll be back. Don Patterson is going to talk to you about, you're going to talk about what?
Going to talk about skill saws, or saws in general, and guides, and a neat little gizmo that I ran across at Sears.
Okay.
I think everybody that has a visual impairment or not may really get a be able to use.
Because Sears doesn't make stuff for the blind, do they? So this is a
absolutely.
This is a sighted thing. All right, back with more of our Blind Handyman Show in just a minute.
Thank you.
Play a little Ain't Misbehaving and see what it sounds like.
No, I
you
pulled
do
my plug out.
Well, you did what?
I pulled the plug
out. I knew you were going to be trouble. I knew that.
Let me just
help you fix your plug.
Okay, I fixed it. No.
He fixed it.
So, huh? Now, yes.
You had it. You have us all fixed.
Right.
You don't want to play the piano? There's a piano in the studio where we are, and Don was playing a little Ain't Misbehaving in the key of C, weren't you?
Well, about that, yeah.
You don't want to do that?
No.
You want to? Okay. Don Shaw is with us. Tom Houston is with us. Tom is running the controls for us, and Don and I are just sort of visiting about some handyman things, and Don Patterson's with us, and John Bennett and John Conley are in the house listening, and they said we really weren't doing that well, but they keep listening anyway, but they may tune to another station.
And have called their lawyers.
May have called their lawyers. But anyway, speaking of lawyers, my wife's in Las Vegas, in case you're wondering. Donald, are you want to talk about saws and guides and jigs and how to cut angles and things of that nature?
Well, yeah, actually, Phil, what I wanted to approach this from the subject that there are none of us that are professional carpenters or electricians or fixer-uppers, really, we do it for ourselves, is really how you wind up kind of being the handyman type guy around the house.
Yeah.
And so if we approach it from that end, then there's probably, like in the world of saws, there's probably three main saws that you're going to come in contact with if you're kind of an amateur, and that's going to be a miter mm-hmm. saw, a table saw, and a skill saw.
Mm-hmm.
Skill saw or a circular saw. And they're all designed and have special purposes, but then sometimes they're interchangeable. And if anybody really, if you were going to want the most perfect straight cut probably on anything of any size, the two saws that would be the most, the ones you would probably use at first would be if it was like a 2x4 or 4x4 or something. That would be your miter saw. If you just wanted to make one cut, either a 45-degree angle or a straight cut, a 90-degree angle. If you were ripping a board or something, big sheet of plywood or something, the safest and the easiest and the most accurate way would be your table saw, where you can use the fence, which is another word for a guide. But there's some situations where neither of these two saws is going to work, and you're going to be stuck with using your handheld skill saw, or like a circular
which
saw.
Which is a handheld saw.
Which is called a circular saw.
Yeah.
And so, in some of my home projects, I found the need for the saw. And of course, being visually impaired or not, the problem you run into is keeping a straight line.
You still want to cut it straight whether you can see it or not.
Whether you can see it or not, you want what you're doing to be straight.
Mm-hmm.
And with this out in free space with your handheld saw, there's really nothing to guide you but your eyesight. I've seen carpenters with perfect vision that can cut down a pencil line. I can't do it. So I said, what do I do? How can I cut a straight line? Well, it just so happens that I found a little piece of equipment. It costs $39.95 at Sears. I'm sure there are other manufacturers. This just happens to be
the one you bought.
I bought. It's made by Craftsman, which is usually Sears tools. It's called the AccuRip. And it will attach very simply and easily to the front of any of most manufacturers of skill saws. And it is usually attached by two wing nuts. They're really kind of compression nuts. After you get the guide in the place that you want it, then you can tighten down these two wing nuts, and it secures this guide. And what it does, in a sense, is you set it for the width of whatever you're wanting to cut. Let's say I have a piece of plywood that's 30 inches wide, but yet I only want 23 inches of this.
Okay.
I would set my guide, and it's based on zero, the zero point being where the saw blade is. And so the 23 inches would be out to your left.
Oh, so this thing is built for skill saws.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you're right-handed, if you're a right-handed person, the part out to your left would be out 23 inches, and you would put it on the outside of the board that you're cutting, and it will track this outside edge, and there's no need for a pencil mark or a chalk line or a ruler or anything. If you have it set, it will cut, and with the forward motion, the pressure that you keep on it, on the saw, it keeps it in a straight line.
So this thing is sticking away from the saw on your left,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't do 23 inches. You got a 30 inch piece of plywood, so you do the short side.
No, you would cut. You would set your saw blade being the zero line. You do set your mark for 23 inches, and then when you put your outside,
well, you could set it for 7, which would work just as easy, wouldn't it?
No, because you're coming from the other way. It won't work that way. If you cut it for 7, yeah, then you'd be holding, but 23 inches would be falling off of your cut side.
Right.
And so the when you're cutting a board, you want the least amount possible falling off.
I see.
And so it's usually better to mark the wood that you want to keep, as opposed to the.
Okay, so this thing slides along the edge of the board.
Yeah, it tracks the outside board. The outside border of the board that you're cutting, and if it's straight, and that's if you're using a factory edge, a milled edge,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to keep you straight.
And that would be important to make sure you had either a factory or knew you had a straight edge.
And Don Shaw and I used this in a practical thing and got a really good cut on a cabinet top that I was building, and we cut the back edge, and mm-hmm. we needed 13.5 inches, and we, it was formicaed, and so, but with, not with the roll top, but with a straight 90 degree drop down, and we tracked the 13 and a half inches, and it cut it real nice.
It did.
It made a nice cut.
Of course, you can, it's, if you're going to do these kind of things, first of all, you have to know what a straight edge is, and you have to have something that is a straight edge. You have to have a builder's square, or you, you can't assume that a 2x4 you buy from a lumber yard is that this is a straight edge I use, because it may or may not be straight. You need something iron or aluminum that is, I have a classic piece of angle iron that is absolutely going to be a straight edge because it's machine milled, and you know it. So you need something, but if you buy a factory piece of plywood, chances are pretty good that that edge is going to be, wouldn't you say? If you had nothing else, if you could figure out nothing else to figure out whether it's a straight edge, go in your garage, assuming your garage has a concrete floor, or your house, and stand it up and see if it fits, you know, see if there are any humps in it, see if there are any places that aren't down touching the floor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, important to make sure you have a straight edge. Well, you've got to. Everything's going to be off.
Well, this,
okay,
this,
I got off in left field.
Yeah, this is designed to track the straight edge.
Okay.
Like, in other words, if you're cutting a 1x12, but
yeah,
you only want to retain 10 inches.
Okay.
So you set your guide, being there again, coming from your blade. See, now I'm speaking as a right-hander, so you left-handed people are kind of on your own. But as a right-handed saw user, the blade of the saw would become the zero mark. So, so my guide would go out 10 inches to my left, track the edge of the 1x12 I was cutting, and if everything turned out perfect in the real world, we would have a 2-inch strip on that I was cutting on.
And a 10-inch strip.
And a 10-inch strip.
And a perfectly straight.
And a perfectly straight strip. Because the saw will not vary. The way you push it and the way the guide is designed, it will hold it straight.
This is for, now this is, and this thing is designed for skill saw.
Yeah, it's thing. Designed for skill saws, and the neat thing about it is it, a lot of times if you put an attachment on something or you get, that's all you can do, but this is easily removed, so your skill saw can be just a freehand saw, and once you've lined it up and put it where you want it, it leaves little indentations. You can always put it back in the same place.
Okay.
So it comes 30 seconds. It's quick release, quick attachment.
I built myself a little wood shop here 5 or 6 years, 3 or 4 years ago, and I thought one of the things I want to be able to do in my wood shop is cut, because things come in if you don't do this or you haven't been around it, you don't know. Plywood comes in 4x8 sheets. I mean, that's standard. We'd assume that standard all over the world, wouldn't we? Anyway, 4x8 sheet of plywood. A 4x8 sheet of plywood is a big, unwieldy thing. And you can't get one in my shop and cut it with my table saw. If I had a 4x8 sheet of plywood that I wanted to rip, I would take it outside, put it up on some sawhorses, or if nothing else, get 4 dining room chairs and put it on those 4 dining room chairs and cut it with my skill saw rather than try to manhandle it in your shop or in your small closed space. Because, like I said, a 4x8 sheet of plywood by yourself is a
big, heavy,
I know guys, you know guys. Robert Todd could throw one up on the saw and draw him a pencil line and walk right down it.
The maximum cut on this little Accu rip that I'm talking about is 24 inches, but I have found on the internet there's a company that makes specialized tools. It's doubtful that you would want to be wanting to cut something this big, but it has an 8-foot cut. So, so you could cut, theoretically, a 12-foot, you could cut 8 feet off of a 10-foot something or other, but this, the 24 inches is plenty for the average home project.
And its outside edge is adjustable. You can move it, you can make it any 2 inches or 4 inches or 8 inches or 2 feet or whatever. I haven't seen this thing. When you ride home after a while, you need to bring it back.
It's great.
I need to see it.
Every blind person needs one.
Yeah,
every blind person should be born with a copy of a screen reader and this, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Is that it?
Well, you know, no, and just talking about adaptive, in a sense, this is adaptive technology, and you made a comment earlier that was real poignant, and that's the fact that sometimes we become the beneficiaries of adaptive technology in spite of ourselves. This was not designed for blind people.
Yeah.
This was designed because there are sighted carpenters that needed it. Just plain and simple.
They have to cut a line too. Yeah. And not every sighted carpenter can draw a pencil line and walk down it.
That's right. True.
Absolutely.
If he's old.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And Shaw was talking about earlier, when I first met him, we decided that we both liked this kind of thing, building things and creating things. He brought over a little deal that your, did you say your father made this for you, or you?
So I'm talking about the little jig.
Yeah, it's just a little deal, and all it is, it's a square piece of lumber that may be an inch and a half square long. It's a long, maybe it's a foot long, or it could be 18 inches or 6 inches or however long it is. It fits in its own little, like a little box. It fits like you take a flat piece of wood that's, say, 3 inches square, and you drilled a square hole in the middle of this thing, and you stuck this dowel in there, or this square piece in there, and you were able to move it back and forth and tighten it down. So you could, I want something 3.5 inches long. You can set it to 3.5 inches, tighten it down, and every time you lay it up on your piece of wood, it's going to be 3.5 inches long. Well, I just loved it. So I had a guy make me a couple, and for measuring, you don't have to absolutely know. You just need to, all you need to know is how long you want something to be. You don't have to know in inches or feet. This has to be 3 and 8/10 inches. If you're blind, you may not know that. I have a talking measuring tape, but you may not, you may not know the exact measurement, but you can set this little sort of a blind measuring thing, and every time you put it up there, it's going to be the same length.
And you could use it even if you're nailing down a, let's say you were going to nail down a board to be a top of a box, let's say a long, let's say maybe a board, you know,
Or a deck board. You could set this for the depth you wanted,
and you would know exactly where to put in the nail without having to guess, either to guess or measure over so far with your fingers. You'd just know exactly where to put the nail in, and then go to the next one and slide it on down the board.
A couple of years ago, we built, Don Shaw and I built, he helped me build, we built a half a dozen picnic tables. We'd already built some. I decided I was going to build a few more, and I called him, and he came over and helped me. So we took this thing with, these are little picnic tables with benches attached on each side. So we made the top, and what we did is we decided how far we wanted the board that the top boards were going to lay on, and we just set this thing, and we put every board just like that, and drywall screwed it down, and bingo.
We had a little assembly line going
we
that day,
for a while, didn't we, huh?
We sure did. It worked fine.
All right, Houston.
What?
I thought he'd do it back.
I would just say this, too, that talking about jigs and guides and easy ways to do it, there's also a safety factor in there. And we talked about feature in electricity. But guides actually are usually designed in some manner as a form of a safety control. It keeps your hands away from certain places, you know. You know, and if you're using solid sighted or blind, the old saying is always know where your hands are. And really, there's even another saying that says keep your thumbs in your pocket when you're using your skill saw. And I think if our audience is or are blind people, they need to remember this, that a blind person can cut off a thumb or a finger as easy as a sighted person. And so just kind of know where you are.
And it happens.
Sure.
These sorts of things happen to blind people and sighted people every day.
And so use your guides and jigs when you can, and goggles, and safety first. Just
that's right.
Like safety.
Safety.
I let my hand one time, the knuckle of my left hand, pulling a board through that, pushing a board and pulling it. Of course, once it gets past the blade of the table saw, then you can grab the other end of it. I let the knuckle of my left hand get down in, and it felt like something shocked me. It scared me bad. I did not, that table saw didn't get turned on for 3 or 4 months, I'll tell you that. It didn't hurt. It hurt, but the pain wasn't a thing. It just scared me bad. Because you could,
that's just too close.
I play a little guitar, and I need, even if I didn't play guitar, I need all the fingers on my left hand. And I'll tell you one quick story, and I bought the first table saw, and my wife said, you can't use this unless, my wife is sighted. She said, you can't use this unless I'm there watching you. Okay, I think that'll be fine. I'll buy a table saw. So we bought this table saw. One morning I got up about 3. I went out, at this time I had my table saw in the garage. I went out and got ready to cut something, and I called her, went in and said, babe, I'm fixing to use the table saw. You want to get up and watch me? Well, no, but just be careful, you know. So then I was home free. You've heard this story, so, you know. And then on, I could use anything I wanted to. And I've got all kinds of tools, and I've never gotten hurt, but I am very, very, well, we've all got, we all have.
Buy things up.
Huh?
Oh, your what? Your earphone?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Your whole thing quit working? You quit that.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Okay, here's proof. Yeah.
What do you think? His batteries went down?
Here, okay, I'll trace you. Here. 3 years now. Technically challenged.
Telling us about. Well, they have quit work. Everything he has is quit work.
Oh, heaven.
What has he done? All right, is it time to. I see what he's done. Let's see. If I can fix it, I've got it fixed. Could
they're working?
They're working. He had flipped switches until he cut his head.
The one and only handyman show.
The one and only handyman show. Anyway, we've talked about all kinds of things today, and the deal is getting people involved in this little show and getting some emails from people and finding out their thoughts on. We're not only interested in your questions about how to do things, we're interested in your solutions to problems, because you're going to know. You've done, if you're a handyman person, you've done some things that none of the three of us have done. You've solved some problems. You've figured out how to do this or how to do that. And you've done some things that none of us have done. And we want to know about those things. And if you'll email us, we'll call you back and possibly have you as a guest on the show. We'd love to do that, and we'd love to know what you've done and how you've done it. Okay. And our address is
Blind Handyman, and that's all lowercase and all together there, at hotmail.com.
That's
right.
Hey. All right. So, is that about it for today?
That should about wrap it up.
Let me thank Donald Patterson, who's been with us the whole show, Don.
Yes, thanks, sir.
We appreciate
my pleasure.
You have your headphones working now?
Been my pleasure to be here.
Can you hear me?
It's been my pleasure to be here, and I hope whatever we have to say might help somebody, or send us your tips. We'd like to know.
That's right. And Don Shaw, thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming and participating in our little Blind Handy Man and blindhandyman.com. You're gonna be the one checking the email, right?
We'll be checking that email every day.
That's good deal. If you've got a personal message for Don Shaw, you can also send it to him. Thank you for running the board.
My pleasure.
We appreciate you, board engineer. I'm Phil Parr for Don Patterson, Don Shaw, and Tom Houston, and we'll see you next week. And remember, I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.